This week in Retronauts, the gaming equivalents of the shiny Alan Shearer sticker from Merlin Premier League stickers in 1995. Hello, Naughties. Welcome to Retronauts. I still call you Naughties. I wasn't the first one to coin that. I believe it was Nina Matsumoto, but I'm having it. I have decided it's mine. If that's a problem, then there's going to have to be some sort of discipline. Please don't fire me. Today, we've got a very interesting episode for the magpies among us. Do you see?
No.
Because they like them, don't they? The magpies. And you know what they say about magpies? They say two for joy. And there are two magpies here today. Me, Stuart Jip, the host. How good am I at this? Like, come on. Like, I'm like a high caliber DJ. I take that Reddit. I'm not shit and ugly after all. But who's with me today?
Oh, hello, it's Dave. Dave Bulmer, the one who comes on the British Britronauts, I think people have started calling it.
Oh, yes, they have, yes.
Unless you called it that. That might be the official name, and I just haven't looked at the...
I may have called it that, but, like, yeah. It's a bit shameful, isn't it, the Britronauts? It's not...
I don't see why. It's okay. Fine. Yes. Okay. Hello, I'm the other Britronaut, Dave Bulmer. I do these sometimes.
Yes, he does. But it feels like it's been a little while, though. It's been quite a while since we've had you there on Britronauts.
So.
But today's subject, further to the magpie discussion, is very exciting for me.
Yeah.
It's shiny things.
Things. Shiny. That was me doing the voice from that Larian game.
Oh, the Larian game.
Shiny. It's one of them games they made. I can't remember which one.
Baldur's Gate.
The lady used to go shiny. Divinity.
Yeah,
it was one of them.
Divinity.
It was like a 3D, not even overhead view Divinity. It was old. It was pre-original sin Divinity.
I really like the fact that one of those games is called Divine Divinity. That makes me happy.
Yeah.
Like,
it might be that one. That might be the one. Silly. What a silly name.
Is the expression divvy, as in like an idiot, offensive? Mm.
So, yes, I think it is, except nobody knows what the etymology of it is. I've looked this up to find out if it is rude, and I think it is.
Oh, that's a shame, because I was thinking divinity could also almost be like, you've got a great deal of divinity. Could be like insulting someone. But if it is actually offensive, then first of all, I apologize.
Yeah.
And second of all, that's it. I have nothing else. But what are we talking about today? We're already just in the weeds here. We are talking about...
Are you surrounded by birdsong? Are you a princess?
Oh, yes, I am. Yeah, yeah.
Brilliant. All right, carry on.
Thank you. Yeah, I am a princess. Mm-hmm. Do you remember that bit in Funny Shrek where Princess Fiona sings and all the birds, like, die? They explode and they die.
That's the thing about Shrek. It's very funny.
In Funny Shrek, when they subvert the Disney classics by First time I saw that, I was kind of like, oh, this is just a very standard scene of the princess singing to the birds. And then I was sort of like, whoa, hang on, what's happening here? This isn't the same at all. It's different.
That keeps happening in Shrek. They might as well.
In Funny Shrek. Play... No, don't get his name right. It's called Funny Shrek.
Funny Shrek, they should play a record scratch just all the time because of the surprise.
Yeah, every time anyone says anything. Yeah.
Yeah.
But we're talking about shiny things and what does that mean? What are shiny things in video games? Well, there's a long history of what could be termed collectibles.
Yes.
And I'm not talking about crap like a statue of an anime that you would get by paying £150 for a collector's edition that doesn't even have the game in it. Yeah, I just satirized modern gaming just then. That's what you get here. Yeah, no more wrenching sounds, please. There's no, you've made your point and it's starting to get all too real. It's okay. But what I'm talking about are things that you collect that are beautiful and shimmering and shining, shimmering, splendid. You know?
Yeah.
However, I want to go back in time for a second to think about collectibles in general in video games. Now, I believe that there will be earlier examples than this, but the first thing that pops to mind for me is the Pac-Man, you know, the yellow Pac-Man. But what he's collecting, of course, isn't coins or gems or anything particularly shiny. But they are valuable, of course. It's drugs. He's collecting lots.
Oh, I see. What you've done there is you've interpreted the fact that it's like a little white pellet-looking thing, and you've gone, there's a version of that that would be rude. I don't know if rude is the right term. Drugs are quite rude. If the sort of people who have drugs are quite rude, aren't they? They go, I'm going to have drugs, and they put them in, and then they go, woohoo, I've gone all drugsy.
I suppose that's true, but and the way I think of it is if Dennis the Menace does it, then it's rude. And Dennis the Menace doesn't often, to my knowledge, abuse drugs in the Beano.
I don't think he does, no.
He's usually I'd be annoyed if he did. I think if he did, I'd be like, I'm against this change.
I think they've gone too far.
I'll tell you now, though, how many years away do you think we are from Dennis using the old ketamine or something? It's not. I think
we used to be a real country.
But anyway, the Pac-Man hills, of course, you have to collect all of them to complete the stage, including the power pills or pellets. I know it's a very well-worn thing to say, oh, it's like he's having drugs, but I just wanted to make it clear that that's what they could be interpreted as. Well, it's either that or they're supposed to be like slug pellets or something.
This is the thing, right? Being serious for just a moment about this.
Oh, my goodness.
The Pac-Man dots are really interesting because they are actually just abstract, aren't they? Like, we may say, like, oh, they're pills, oh, they're pellets. You can imagine they're coins, anything you want, but they're not. They are just pixels, and they never really... I can't remember if it's said on the cabinet, like, these are pills or whatever, but basically they're the only collectible in games that I can think of that are actually, you know, you're not really supposed to be thinking of them as anything other than what they literally are, which is a little square pixel on the screen.
Pac-Man is fascinatingly abstract in general.
Yes.
It's just this whole game that's essentially about ceaseless consumption. Very easy to make political there, I think. And the Retronauts listeners love it when we get political on here.
Oh, you better have then.
Yeah. But no, I was only bringing that up as a very brief lead-in in sort of the history
Blinky
of
Blinky is a Tory.
Oh, wow. Which one?
No, he's one of the... Oh, which Tory? Oh! Yeah. He is Andrew Bridgen.
Okay. I mean, I think I saw him on TV getting interviewed by Jeremy Pac-Man. Another banger. Oh, so far so good.
I don't think he's in the party anymore. I think he's the one that left to go and hang out with Lawrence Fox.
Oh, well, you know,
stopped even hanging out with him.
Well, everyone stopped hanging out with him when they noticed the smell. So the basic premise of today's episode isn't meant to be some sort of exhaustive history of collectibles or things. We just wanted to talk about shiny things, what we like, and we think are good.
This is, to throw the curtain back here, this one was my idea. And
Dave's idea, yeah.
And it's because I've been wanting to make a video about it for years and I was too lazy, so I thought we'd do it on there. No, that's not why. I thought it would be a good idea. I did want to make a video for it, and I haven't done, but it wasn't just because I'm lazy. But because jewels are a thing that are... And this is going to bring up some stereotypes and so on, and I don't mean to do that, but that's kind of my point. They're sort of feminine-coded in our society. You're sort of supposed to not be very interested in jewels if you're a man, and you are sort of supposed to be interested in them if you're a
girl. The tallest man in the world and made entirely out of gold, obviously.
Oh, God, of course. Then if you were the... Never mind the gold. If you're the tallest man in the world, then you're expected to be interested in jewels.
I mean, I am the tallest man in the world, but I'm not made entirely out of gold.
But are you interested in jewels? Because here's the thing. Jewels are, in fact, lovely to look at. They're really, really nice. And where more so than in video games, where we have grown up being shown lovely pixelated and or 3D-ized jewels, and we see them and we want to collect them. It is innate in the gamer.
You just excavated a childhood memory for me.
All right. What was that?
Do you remember... You're going to remember this because it's you. Do you remember a part work called Treasures of the Earth?
Yeah, I had that. Yeah.
Yeah, of course you did. Well, as a child, I never had that, but I saw it advertised on television and I was like, oh, it comes with a precious stone of immense value. How could they possibly sell this for 99p when they're giving you diamonds? It's crazy. Yeah. But I never got that. But what I did do was, as a kid, I designed... Because it's me, I designed a cartoon based on it. So the characters were like diamonds, and it's like a diamond with like dizzy legs, dizzy arms. And we're like, stuff like that. Treasures of the Earth, except they're just like walking around doing stuff. It's like the Smurfs. If I find the pictures, if I ever find them, I will post them on Twitter or something. But this is the influence of these gems and these crystals and these shinies.
If we're doing that, if we're doing our jewels backstory, mine is that when I was really, really little, Walker's Crisps, known in America as Lay's Crisps, you may have heard of them, American listeners, did some sort of...
Pretty typical that we walk and they lay down, isn't it?
Oh, Got him. That is rude.
It is rude, sorry.
They did some sort of a competition where on the back of each bag of Walker's crisps for ages, it might not have been Walker's, some crisps, there was a jewel. There was a drawing of a jewel of the, you know, the classic Master Emerald design, that one. And if you had to collect all of these, cut them off your bags or whatever, and they said stuff like topaz, and they said what jewel they were, and they were all the same color. It was just like an ink line drawing on white, but they said stuff like topaz, and that was where I learned the word topaz. I'm sure there were other ones as well, but I don't remember which ones because I didn't go like, wow, that's a new word for me. And what you did was you collected them all together, and then with enough of them, you sent off for a sort of book that told you loads of clues and puzzles, and you had to do all these puzzles. And if you were one of the like 1% of people who could figure out the puzzles, then you stood a chance of winning some sort of prize. So that just made me obsessed with kinds of jewels without knowing anything about
it. Is this like a sort of masquerade style thing where you solve the puzzles and then you know the location to find some jewels?
It might have been. It was that level of puzzleage, but that doesn't matter. Yeah. The point is, there was a little drawing of a diamond and it said topaz, and that got me all excited.
You know, I think there's an episode of Retronauts in things like Masquerade and Tasks of Tantalon and real-life puzzles. There really is. But yes, gems are good, and we all like them, but what we especially like to do is collect them in computer games. Now, it's not just gems. There's also shiny things also extends to certain subtypes of coin, which raises a very important question, which Dave, in fact, reminded me prior to recording that we should definitely address this because it's a difficult subject, which is what exactly is a coin?
What is it?
What is it? I'm asking you. What is a coin?
Are you asking me personally?
Okay. For me, I mean, if you don't mind me saying, I don't want to come off as ignorant on the show. Yeah. But for me, when I look at a coin, it's a sort of disc.
It's a circle.
It's a small disc.
It's a kind of little circle.
And it's ridged.
Some of them are ridged.
Somewhat ridged. But also, there's a man on it.
Some of them have got a lady on them.
Yeah, some of them have a lady on them, and some of them have a man on them, and I'm not sure if that's like a sort of kind of outdated thing where only like people identifying as men can use these ones, and only people identifying as women can use these ones.
No, that's what they are. They're gendered ones. For most of our lifetime here in the UK, only women could use coins.
Yeah, I can see women, they do like shopping.
But now it's our day. Now our time has come.
Can I just stress the fierce irony of that joke I just made? I want to stress the very fierce irony that was behind it.
It was being silly. We're both being silly. None of this is true.
No, it's nonsense.
Except that there are faces on the back of the coin. Actually, what the face on the back of the coin is, that's the coin's face. You can talk to that. And you can say, how much are you worth? And it'll go, 1p.
That's pretty good. Yeah. They don't say 1p, they say 1p.
1p is what they say, And then the other side, sometimes, of coins, you might find a gate. You might have a thistle. You might have a three-pronged little flower, like a ferny-looking thing. I don't know what that is.
If you get the thistle and you trap it sort of between your fingers and blow, you can summon the family nest, which is quite good.
Oh, yeah, that's good. Sometimes you might have a load of interlinked hands, and if you rub one of the edges, you get a wish.
Retronauts listeners right now listening, just like, why aren't they going to talk about video games? I'm sorry, we're never going to talk about video games.
Oh, yeah, that's not... video games.
Yeah, video games. So what we're going to do, the basic premise is, rather than anything particularly formal, we're going to sort of talk about the shiny things we like in video games and what we like about them and about those games as they relate to said shiny things. And Dave, because you're my honored, treasured guest and beloved
treasured,
friend.
Like treasure.
Yeah. And I'd say you yourself are a bit of a rare gem.
Yeah.
When I said that, I winked. I know you can tell, but you can't see it.
I can absolutely tell.
I'd like you to go first, please. I'd like you to give us our first shiny.
Okay. Well, so I don't even know whether to even bring this up because it's so obvious. Okay. But, like, they know our proclivities. We have to get this out of the way. Chaos Emeralds.
Chaos Emeralds.
We've got to get the Chaos Emeralds out of the way.
There's really no other way to proceed, is there? It's got to be done.
Yeah, we've got to mention them.
With luck, we will not. This will not turn into a five-part series about the Chaos Emeralds.
No, they won't. Yeah. So now the blue one.
Yeah, Jesus, we could as well, couldn't we?
Do you know the Chaos? No, here's what I'll say: the Chaos Emeralds, inspiring as they are, and I've always loved them and very, very dearly.
Yeah,
they're not very high on the list of like good-looking jewels in games. They're not very jewelly looking.
They look quite dull, don't they?
They kind of do. The one time when I've really just adored them is at the start of Sonic 3 when Knuckles punches the Chaos Emeralds out of Super Sonic and they all scatter on the ground. And they're all little. And they're different colours. And I had them on a sticker of that screenshot and I loved it and I put it on my bed and I loved them. Because they're different colours. That's by the way, one of the best things about jewels, and this is in real life as well, is that they're different colours to each other. And you can look at them and you can have a blue one and you can have a red one and a green one, whatever, and you can look at them. And you could be like, if you ever... I don't know if anyone else does this, but sometimes when I'm looking at, say, the blue, like a blue sky, have you ever peered up at a blue sky and gone to yourself,
yes,
what actually am I looking at here? Like, what part of my eyes is seeing blue and my brain is accepting that it's seeing it? I can't exercise any other senses on this blue. So you ever just look at it and just process that in the way that you did when you were a tiny little child and you had, maybe this is the origin of these thoughts. I remember I went to a big marbles shop with my family. And
it was a dedicated shop for marbles.
It was, and I picked out three blue marbles of different kinds, and I would just stare at them, at the different blues they were. One was a see-through blue, one was not a see-through sort of blue.
Oh my goodness.
I would just peer at them. And that's what jewels are like. I will stare into jewels and go like, wow, that is red that I am looking at right now. It came just out of the earth. And it's decided to be red. It's that color. Look at that. I'm looking into that color right now. One of the best examples of that color that you're ever going to see.
You know, I went to a geology lecture, and this is exactly what they said, actually.
Is that true?
No. No. I went to a geology lecture. That's me. I went to McDonald's. now.
Skip the geology lecture.
Yeah, exactly. I was going to go to the geology lecture, but on the way I was like, oh, hey, yeah, Big Mac, yeah, let's go.
Oh, imagine if at the geology lecture they told you how to unearth jewels from the earth, and instead of that, you'd spent money on a Big Mac when you could have made money getting jewels. And
I would be fine with it.
Yeah,
I live moment to moment. I can be at my worst. You know, I've had incredibly bad days, like terrible, sure, like painful, wrenching, emotional days. I remember one day in particular when I didn't have a job or sort of any prospects whatsoever. I didn't know what I was going to do. And I didn't have any money.
No.
I had like £1. And one of the things I did buy at the time that would sort of make me have a small thing I enjoyed was like some Pepsi, some Diet Pepsi.
Yeah.
And on the way back in the rain from like the job center where nothing was happening, yep, I went in the shop, sort of a shelter, and they had Diet Pepsi. But on that particular day, It was buy one, get one free for £1, which is all my money.
Oh.
And you know what? That was a good day.
It doesn't sound like a good day. I'm quite depressed now, having heard that.
For me, it was, because I'm all about the moment-to-moment gratification.
I bet you were fine then. I bet you went,
woohoo! Yeah, I was like, okay, so what you're saying is I get to drink 600 milliliters of delicious cold Diet Pepsi right now, and then another 600 milliliters of delicious cold Diet Pepsi later. And there's people listening to this going like, this is depressing. You are
a
monster. But no, that's how it is for me. Small thing that will turn my day around and it will make the day worth it. And that's how I feel about these treasures, you know.
If you had those two Diet Pepsis and you thought, I'm going to make the most of these Diet Pepsis. This is a philosophical conundrum. Okay. I'm going to make the most of these Diet Pepsis by opening them both at the same time, tilting them towards my mouth from two different angles at the same time. So it goes in at the same time. And then at the end, you'd realize that actually, they both ended at the same time, so you might as well just have had one, even though you'd consumed twice as much. Or would that happen, or would it take twice as long to gulp all of that? That's my question.
I think you'd have other problems, but...
Oh, well, it sounds like you had loads of other problems.
I did, but, like, I mean, for me, it's not about necessarily about the ingestion so much, have completed the ingestion. It's about the experience of... Oh, I've still got some more of this. That was nice. Now I'll do something else. Oh, I've still got some more of this.
Yep.
That's how I feel about these gems, you know. These gems.
Absolutely.
I mean, the Chaos Emeralds, for example, you were talking earlier about digging in digging up gems. That's what Knuckles does in Sonic Adventure, isn't it? That's his main thing he has to do, because they have correctly identified and noted that the funnest thing to do in the world is to look for treasure.
Look for treasure. And yeah, find remember, treasure as well.
Do you remember Terrence and Philip, Not Without My Anus, when they look for treasure?
Not really.
Okay,
do you remember Annika Rice when she looked for treasure?
Yeah, she was always looking for treasure, wasn't she?
She was cutting about looking for treasure all the time.
Yeah.
I bet she's loaded by now. She must have loads of treasure hoarded away.
Yeah. Give us your treasure, Annika.
They should send knights to fight her for her hoard.
Yes, they should. With the Chaos Emeralds, of course, I'm getting ahead of myself, because those aren't actually the Chaos Emeralds. Those are shards of the Master Emerald, which is the big version of the Emerald. Now, the Chaos Emeralds, as we all know, cannot be acquired, generally speaking, without completing a not very good special stage.
Yeah.
Like, for example, in Sonic 1, it's a big spinny me bob, kaleidoscope nonsense. Sonic 2, it's 3D half pipe nonsense. Mm-hmm. In Sonic 3, it's Get Blue Spheres, which is the best one because it's the
That's
easiest
a good
one. Yeah. But it's also, you know, I don't really want to do it all the time, which is where Sonic Mania got it wrong, because they put 26 of those or so in.
They did do too many of those, didn't they? Yeah.
They did too much of everything in that game. Good game, though. Good game.
Yeah.
But the Chaos Emeralds,
I want to move on from them quite quickly, because
we will. But
we needed to establish
something I want to make clear,
because
unlike a lot of the things we're going to mention today, these are integral to the full completion of the game.
Yeah.
So you really do need all of them, and thankfully it's usually not that hard to get them. It's quite hard in Sonic 1. It's somewhat hard in Sonic 2. They're not so much as it used to be for me.
Mm-hmm.
And in Sonic 3, quite frankly, it's a breeze, but that's mostly because we've played that game so much that we know where everything is in the world.
Yeah.
And that's fine. But you know the Chaos Emeralds. You know the Grey Emerald is the control emerald. Everyone knows that.
Yeah.
But it's also the least appealing emerald, isn't it?
No, because it's the most powerful one.
Do you think there's a beige emerald?
No.
Well, I don't know why I asked you that.
I know there isn't. I've looked.
Yeah, that's a shame. Okay.
There's loads of pictures of the Chaos Emeralds.
But on the sort of Chaos Emerald, on the same sort of jive, the Chaos Emeralds aren't actually really emeralds, are they? They're just called that. They're not emeralds. But if you were to look in the text thing for a second here, we're doing this in a slightly shambolic way of sending pictures back and forth, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You will be able to see what is known as Big Diamond. The Big Diamond.
Stuart, this was my next one!
We are in sync. We are Justin Timberlake and the others who nobody knows their names or where they are or if they're even alive. The big diamonds. Now, diamonds, everyone loves them.
Mm-hmm.
They're forever. They're a girl's best friend.
Yeah.
No, sorry, that was Gold Nuggets and that was DuckTales. Diamonds, they're everyone's favorite. And the difference between these diamonds and a regular diamond is, of course, they are big.
Big.
They are big, colorful diamonds, each one. One of the colors of the rainbow. Okay? And the way you get these diamonds is in each stage you have to collect each of the different colored gems of the rainbow in each level. All of them. Red, orange, yellow.
Are you deliberately not saying what game you're talking about at this point?
Rainbow Islands. I thought I said it already.
I don't think you did.
Did I not say Rainbow Islands?
I don't think you did.
Oh, wow, I'm not very good at this, am I?
Well, I thought you were teasing, I thought you were building up to it.
Rainbow Islands, the story of Bubble Bobble 2. You know what? Don't get into the whole sequel chronology of this series, because mm-hmm. it's an absolute disaster. But yes, get all of the different rainbow gems, red, orange, yellow, green, blue, indigo, violet, Roy G. Biv, we all know it.
Yeah.
And then you will get a big diamond at the end of the stage, and the only way to get to the secret islands in the game is to collect these diamonds. Now, it's not as easy as it sounds, is it, Dave?
No, it's not. Now, I don't know this game that well. I had it on the Spectrum, but only played it like a couple of times. So to me, I actually didn't know about these. It was the little colored gems I was going to bring up, but still of this game. So it's still, you know, kind of the same one. Yeah, Rainbow Island's a game where you get what is it? You shoot rainbows at baddies and they pop into little diamonds and you have to pick them up. And are they random, the colours they are? And you have to just like try and hope you get the
right
ones?
No, I believe you have to drop rainbows on certain spots to make the diamonds appear. It's actually more obtuse than that.
That's right.
Rainbow Islands is a game that I believe it's not actually playable anywhere reasonable yet, but there is Taito Milestones 3 coming out, and I think it's on that.
There's not a current way that you can play one of the...
It might be on Arcade... It's possible it's on Arcade Archives, and I'm not well aware of that. Because the thing is, if it was on Arcade Archives, I'm reasonably sure I would have bought it, and if I haven't, something's gone horribly wrong with me.
Yeah, Rainbow Islands is a big game. It's no small potato fry. It's when it was out originally, I remember it being a big deal, full page ads in all the magazines.
Yeah.
Everyone excited about it. It's out on every single format. And well, it should be, because it's got that Taito style, you know, it's good. They're great at drawing. They're good drawers, and they're drawing a little anime boy who's hopping about and he's shooting rainbows at little animals with big eyes. And turning them into jewels that are different colours. They're jewels, and they're different colours. Mm. It's one of the simplest things in the world. This is something we've gone into on my podcast a lot. I remember particularly as a kid being into like the same thing but different colours. That's what the appeal of Power Rangers, right? They just stand there, they're different colours. Chaos Emeralds, same thing, different colours. These are better than Chaos Emeralds to look at. Look how shiny they are.
They are better than Chaos Emeralds. Yeah.
Look how bright and colourful they are.
Yeah, and they're diamonds, you know.
And they're diamonds. I, when I was little, had a little dream where... I can't have been that little. I must have been about 10 or 11, even.
20
where I was on the school playground, and I was just kicking about in a grassy bit in the corner. And I noticed And I noticed one of these jewels in the grass.
Oh.
Specifically the ones from Rainbow Islands.
Mm.
And I realized that they were something where once you have to be on the right wavelength. Once you've seen one, you start to see them. You're like, there's one, and there's another one. And so me and my friends were gathering up jewels. Ooh, it was great. Imagine gathering these up.
Imagine if that dream had been real, you'd be loaded, wouldn't you?
I would, but also it would massively devalue. Like, if it turned out there was just jewels everywhere.
That's true, yeah. But if you were the first ones to market, it was sort of Bitcoin sort of thing, you know?
Still probably not, but yeah.
Hmm. What if you were having a dream that there was Bitcoin hidden in the ground? You just leave it there, wouldn't you?
What if? Yeah.
How would you even get it onto your computer? It's absurd.
I would just kick it away into the cow field and hope that one of them poos on it.
So Rainbow Islands, before we move off of it, Rainbow Islands, now this is a game that has actually quite a lot of... now this is a very well-known game everywhere, obviously, but in the UK...
The noughties all know all about it.
In the UK, this was ported by Graftgold...
Yes.
To the
enemy of Scrooge,
the microcomputers. No, David, come on. No, not Glomgold. Said something else, didn't I? You thought it was bloody hell. Anyway, we always do it. It's always like this. But Graphgold, a very good software house, port house, and also did Fire and Ice, which meant that the conversions of this game for everything, all the way down to the Spectrum, were magnificent.
Yeah.
They're not arcade perfect, but we didn't expect them to be arcade perfect. We were versed enough, we would look on the back of the tape of the Spectrum game, we would see the screenshots in full colour, and we would go, well, it's obviously bollocks, there's no way, it doesn't look like that, but we don't care.
Screenshots may not be from the ZX Spectrum version.
Screenshots may not even be real. Screenshots may be made up.
No, but seriously though, a thing that they did that's genuinely remarkable is... that there were actually like seven colours of jewel on the Spectrum version that I had.
The whole Spectrum on the Spectrum.
Well, yeah, but that is actually like, you know, the name is quite ironic and it is genuinely really difficult to pull that off, and I don't know quite how they did it.
Can I just, as a side note, I know it's rare that we go off on side notes on our podcast.
Oh, it never happens.
This one time it's okay. Didn't the screenshots on the back of Spectrum games taken with... too high contrast with a normal camera off the Atari ST version just look so much more interesting than modern direct feed screenshots?
Oh my god, so much. Now that I'm old enough to have looked up YouTube videos of the Atari versions of, say, the Dizzy Games game that I had, I'm like, oh, that's rubbish. But because I grew up looking at this just bananas incredible screenshot of like an imagination fantasy game from the year 7000.
Too high contrast, off directly from a crappy old CRT television. just at, like digital bliss. I can look at them now, and it's like you're going through a portal. That's how good they are.
The screenshot of Fast Food Dizzy on the Atari just looks like better graphics than you can get now.
I do get it.
Maybe I suppose on this with a good bit of CRT blur, it would actually have looked quite a lot better than it does in those videos where it's all.
It's possible. Something I want to bring up, actually, because I it's not that I wasn't confident in our ability to do this podcast, but I did poll the Retronaut listeners, the Naughties, about this.
Sure.
Now, this next book, do you mind if I do one? I think, no, wait, it's your turn, isn't it?
Technically, but you've started. Go on.
I have started, haven't I? I'm really just stepping all over you today. I'm really sorry.
No, it's fine.
Well, as you can see, Dave Bomber,
hello.
This is a hero coin.
Yes.
Now, this was nominated by Task Barkitect on the Retronauts Discord. Thank you, Task Barkitect. Now, the Hero Coin is very good. It's very good. I would have nominated this if someone else hadn't, because what the Hero Coin is it's massive.
Yes.
It's the same size as Diddy Kong, if not bigger.
Yeah, are you aware that you haven't said what game we're talking about again?
Yes.
Okay, good.
I'm getting to it.
Just checking what your method was.
Yeah,
carry on.
It's Diddy's... Donkey Kong Country 2, Diddy's Kong Quest. Not Diddy's Conquest. Not Diddy Kong's Quest.
No.
Diddy's Kong Quest. Okay.
It's a pun because it's a British
very,
game.
Very funny. And the Hero Coin from DKC2, as I will now be referring to it, is genuinely, for me, one of the single best collectibles ever for myriad reasons. The reasons are myriad, Dave.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to believe how myriad they are.
Well, tell me some of them and I'll judge then.
Well, I will, but I'll say one and you'll think, well, that's not that myriad, but then
I'll do some more. I can't think of a single time when one has been myriad.
No, I can't. No. Anyway, now, first of all, it's a big coin that says DK. That's cool, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's a cool logo of Donkey Kong, except in this game, Donkey Kong's been captured and you're playing as Diddy Kong or Dixie Kong.
But it doesn't matter. They didn't have to switch the logo out.
No, they didn't have to.
They're all cool.
That's why they couldn't use these in Donkey Kong 64 because they got lazy and started naming them like Chunky Kong and Lanky Kong, which is different letters.
See, they should have called them Donkey Kong and what was the other
Dinky
one?
Dinky Kong. The small one. It's so easy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, now, these hero coins are hidden remarkably well. They're very hard to find, considering that they are massive.
Hard they are to find. I don't really recognize it, and I had this game.
Yeah, that they are that hard to find, and there are 50-odd of them, and they are sort of the final thing to get. I don't think you need them to finish the game. They're not creme coins, which is another type of coin in that game. The creme coins are used to unlock secret levels, but I don't believe these are. They just put you on a roster of like a rostrum, you know, of video game. That's what they're called, right? Those tiered platforms for people who have won stuff.
A roster,
podium,
yeah.
The podium.
Oh, yeah, God, no.
Or is it a rostrum? Or is a rostrum some sort of potato bake? I really don't know.
I don't know. I'll look
anyway,
it up.
Yeah, this is Retronauts, not Wordtronauts.
Rostrum. It's a raised platform. You were right.
Yes.
You did it. I'm going to put you on one for getting that right.
Thank you very, very much.
On which a person stands to make a public speech, receive an award or medal.
There we
go. Or play musical conductor. You nailed that rostrum.
Thank you, Dave. That's really kind. This has actually really warmed my heart. But anyway,
next time you see a rostrum, you should go and stand on it too.
I will. I will stand on it, and I'll get thrown out of whatever the event is. I don't care.
Yeah, probably, because it'll be for somebody else, won't it, that's getting
And I'll lean over and I'll say, really, you're throwing me out for wanting to simulate the experience of having won something?
Yeah.
Me? Anyway, DK Coin. Now, first of all, they're very hard to find, so when you do find them, it's extremely rewarding.
You can only find them in Diddy Kong's Quest.
Diddy's Conquest.
Yes.
Where I am succeeding at words, you unfortunately are.
Now I love the way that you pronounce that because what
where
you did
succeeding
was that you did not succeed at words.
I did not succeed. I did not succeed at words.
No. That was very good.
I was.
That made me happier than I was a moment
ago.
I've
been hoisted by my own petard.
Yeah.
Now, but when you the best thing about these coins is when you collect them, they don't just go like ping or dong. They go like this. Now, I can't recreate it perfectly, but just let me finish. Okay, this is quite a long noise. They go.
That's quite long.
They do two noises.
Is it finished? Is
this they do the noise, then they do the noise again in a higher pitch, basically.
Is this still the noise of the sort of...
Oh, no, this is... They don't do me speaking. No.
Is this still it?
No, it's not. It's not messing around.
Is this still it?
Oh, my God. The bit is finished. It is finished. The coins, they make a wonderful noise, an astonishing noise, a noise that makes all the struggle you've been through worth it, in my opinion.
Well, now this... This is an important point about all of the pick-me-ups that we're going to talk about today. Pick-me-ups, that's not what they're called, but they do. That's what they do. They're pick-me-ups. They pick you, you get... Is that the best ones all make a good noise, don't they?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they absolutely do, yeah.
Yep, the Chaos Emeralds go... Diddly-dud. No, they go... I nearly did a continue noise, and that would have been absolutely wrong.
Well, continue noise, yeah, that's a good noise too. The problem with getting a continue noise to me is almost redundant, because who loses all their lives in a Sonic game? Like, come on, no one. Small children, very small children, who have bad hand-eye coordination. But the thing about these coins that makes them very exciting to me is when you get them, you get on the rostrum, as mentioned. Okay, now the rostrum consists of Donkey Kong characters, I believe. Now, to get on the number one position, you need to get all of them. But in the corner of the rostrum room is a bin.
The rostrum room?
There is a bin there. A trash can, as the Americans would call it. A garbage can. And there's a sign next to it that says, no hopers.
Hmm.
Guess what's in the bin?
You.
I thought we were friends, Dave.
No, not you personally. I mean, the player.
Oh, I get you. Okay, no, it's not the player. That would be quite funny, though. What it actually is Sonic's shoes.
Oh, wait a minute. That's quite funny.
Yeah,
that is quite funny.
But also, what I think is even funnier is there's
I'm remembering that now as you say it. I remember going, that's quite funny.
Earthworm Jim's red gun.
Oh, cool.
Now, what I find funny about that is that it crystallizes the period in the games industry when Earthworm, the one like month or year maybe, when Earthworm Jim was considered a formidable franchise.
Yeah, absolutely.
Franchise.
That's exactly like if it was, you know, Zool's mask or something like that.
It, like, nowadays it's completely meaningless. You see that it's like Bubsy's t-shirt or something. Even that would be more recognizable than Earthworm Jim's big red gun, I reckon, you know? Bubsy's exclamation mark t-shirt. Now, so that for me is the worth of the hero coins, because not only do you get to look for these really well-hidden, fun-to-find coins, and they are some of the best collectible placement ever. I think they're genius, the way they make think outside the box to get them.
Brilliant.
But not only that, you get some world-class shade. And even better, British-developed game. Let's hear it for the Brits.
Yeah, right.
Let's move on to something else. What's next on your exciting list of trinkets?
Okay, so now I wanted to mainly do jewels because they're the ones that are the shiniest, but we're doing coins at the moment, right? And some of my favourite coins, probably in any game, is the coins in Wario Land 4.
Oh, they are good coins.
Aren't they good?
Aren't they good coins?
Don't get me wrong. There's some great jewels in that game as well, and I think we can double up. I think we can talk about all of this.
Because I agree,
Wario Land is a collecting game. You are on the Game Boy Advance in Wario Land 4, and you are running about, and there's all sorts of things to do. It's kind of a platform puzzler. But this is all drawn along. Your eye is drawn, and your interest is drawn by the gathering of things, such as flying, like the kind of crystal that's like a rod with pointed ends, like a rupee.
Yeah. They look like rupees from Zelda, you're quite right.
They'll be like little rupees.
And some of them.
Like, they're flying there. But whenever you like bash a baddie, all coins come out of him, and this is this is so far so normal, right? There's loads of games where you bash a baddie and coins come out. But the thing about the coins in Wario Land 4 was that when you scatter them, they kind of scatter like at different speeds. It really looks like a load
semi-realistically.
Of things. Yeah, semi-realistically, and there's like normal size ones, and then there's little ones, and then there's tiny little ones that are just like a pixel big and beautiful. And they kind of bimble along the ground, and you pick them all up. It's just gorgeous.
It's wonderful, and you know, not to mention the fact that when you go into, for example, secret areas in that game, you can sometimes find a gigantic blue diamond, even bigger than the big diamonds from Rainbow Islands. It's that big.
Oh, yeah, it's so big.
That diamond, the size of Wario himself.
You often have to chuck an old man at it to get it.
Yeah, in a room that goes do 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 do. Do, yeah. Do 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 like that,
exactly like that.
It's good. Can I nominate a sort of a wild card good collectible from Wario 4, please? The CDs.
Oh my goodness! I mean,
because
I love vinyls.
As I suppose they actually are supposed to be vinyls, but not only are they in vinyl cases, aren't they? They're in like
I don't recall
metal cases that you crash, you hit them, and then they open, and the vinyl comes out. And when you get them, you can listen to them, and they're always weird little videos of like a live action man dressed as Wario while obtuse experimental noises play.
Yes,
and to me, it's the absolute pinnacle of weird Nintendo right there.
Oh, 1,000,000,000%. What, like, the only reason Wario Land 4 is not the pinnacle of weird Nintendo is because it spawned WarioWare.
Oh, yes, WarioWare,
like,
yeah.
Which is. But, like, yeah, it's the closest you get to Nintendo weird on 100%, but within the confines of a fairly traditional kind of a game.
I think this would be a good time for me to shout out the upcoming indie game Anton Blast, which may be out by the time this episode drops, which is a Wario Land 4 homage, amongst other things. It's very, very good.
Anton Blast.
Yeah, look it up. You will love it. I guarantee it.
I will. I'm doing
I guarantee.
It now.
But yes,
oh,
Wario,
this. Yeah. Oh yeah, this.
The Wario
really
Land series in general is a collecting paradise, frankly.
While
we're talking about Wario Land 2, for example, the coins in that are very basic, but the thing that makes it good is that almost every single wall in the game, there will be more coins behind it if you break it, and you will just go into a void.
Oh,
and outside the level, and you will find 60 coins there.
If we're talking about... So this is one of the key reasons to talk about collectibles in games at all. By the way, in the course of my last few years, I've come to understand that Americans... I'm going to generalize. I'm sorry, Americans, but...
Let's, to be fair, I made a quite lazy fat joke about Americans earlier, which I feel bad about now.
Ooh,
so.
Yeah, that's bad.
I mean, coming from me, it's the pot calling the kettle black, really.
Well... they think of collectibles as kind of a British thing anyway, kind of a European
they
game
do,
thing.
They do, Scrimbo.
Because even though, obviously, you know, Mario collected coins, you know, we all understand this. It's not going to really come up in this episode, I shouldn't think, because it's just understood. But our games, that was like so much a part of what you did. I don't know, I guess there's just a different... there's just some sort of difference. European games had a lot of collectibles.
There are many games where you have to collect everything.
Maybe they're mainly
the point
thinking
is collecting.
Of Rare being... maybe they're thinking of Banjo-Kazooie, because that was a big collecting game. That had a lot of... That's a good one if you like to hoover up your bits.
Yeah, I was about to bring that up, actually. But
Let's do it.
But yeah, well... Trick Them on... sorry if I got the name wrong. It's Trick the... term. I'm not sure if that's a typo or if that's the actual name, on the Retronauts Discord, brought up Jiggies from Banjo-Kazooie. And I think Jiggies are world-class. I think they're genius.
Which one were they? They were like little guys, little birds or something.
No,
were they?
They're the ones that are giant jigsaw pieces that are made of gold that spin around. And they're like the version,
they're
equivalent
are.
Of Power Stars from
of
Mario
Of course
64,
they are. Why did I
except
think
they're
they
better.
Were little guys?
You're thinking about the Jinjos.
Oh, see, I'm just hearing the J, and I'm going from there. Okay.
You're thinking about, see, this is how I got my name. Jip, Jiggy, Jinjo, Jip. That's
I wondered.
Yeah. But the thing about the Jiggy is, like, what makes the Jiggy psychologically brilliant is collecting a power star in Super Mario 64 is cool. It's like, cool, I got a star, but like, it's a star. It's just a star, you know. Collecting a Jiggy, you're like, I've got a piece of something.
Mm.
And if I got all the pieces or enough of the pieces, I can do a jigsaw puzzle.
Put this together, you make something bigger.
Now, it's not a real jigsaw puzzle. This is automatically solved, unless you're playing Banjo-Tooie, in which case you have to do a small jigsaw puzzle, which I think is one of those feature creep things that really shouldn't have been in the game. But I digress. I love Banjo-Tooie. I'm not going to crap on Banjo-Tooie like everyone else does. I think it's a masterpiece, but, you know. But collecting the jiggies, the best thing about that, apart from the thing I already said was the best thing about that, the other best thing about that, is when you collect them, Banjo does a little dance, and the music on a banjo goes dun 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 dun, dun blum blum. Yeah, and he goes gah. Yeah. Now, what goes hand in hand with a good collectible, as we have talked about, is an excellent reward for getting the collectible in the moment. And I think that dun 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 dun, dun gah is up there with bululum bululum.
It's a very good one. I mean, listen, we can't. If we're talking about collectibles and their good noises in that game, we got to go, Ikon Borkum.
Ikon Borkum.
Ikon Borkum. It's one of the best collectible noises that any game has ever had.
That is actually true,
You collected little skulls in that game and they went, Ikon Borkum.
Yeah, they were Mumbo Jumbo skulls. Mumbo Jumbo being a character from the game. Now, I don't know if anyone who listens to Retronauts is aware that I enjoy VTubers, but. There was a very entertaining period of my life when Inugami Kurone was playing Banjo-Kazooie, and you don't know joy until you have seen her mimic Ikon Borkum.
Yeah, that's a good clip.
It's joyous. I implore you to look it up, Kurone Ikon Borkum. Now, Banjo-Kazooie, of course, isn't just about jiggies, though they are the main thing you have to get.
Yeah, you get jiggies with it.
Yeah. Oh, that's very good, Dave.
Thank you.
Well done.
Thank you.
And but you also get musical notes, which I surely there's been a game before this where you collect musical notes. There is something in my head, but I can't quite piece together what it is. I can't quite piece together what it is, but there must have been one. But collecting them in this game is great because when you collect them, you do indeed hear a musical note. It's all very diegetic, you know, it's lovely. It works. And with the focus, now I'm a big fan of the musical notes for a reason that is quite controversial, actually. It's quite a controversial reason.
He's sexually attracted to them.
I said not to say that. but no, they're an interesting collectible because to get through some of the late game, you need certain numbers of notes to open certain doors. And the later ones are very high. They're like 880 out of 900, really lots of them.
Yeah.
And the way that you get the notes is you collect them. And then when you either leave the level or die, you have a top note score, which means to get all of the notes, you have to collect every note in the level, all 100 of them, and not die, which is, in the later stages, is not the easiest thing to do. Now, a lot of people don't like that, and I kind of understand why. I'm open to understanding why. And later, in the Xbox 360 and Rare Replay versions of Banjo-Kazooie and Banjo-Tooie, although not Tooie, actually, just Kazooie, they changed it so that when you collect a note, you've always got the note.
Right.
Which turns the notes from an interesting challenge into just bollocks. Nothing, like, just some shit that's lying around.
Yeah, I don't see...
And I find that, like, I find that mildly objectionable. And yet when I voice that objection, I feel like I'm wandering into the territory of, you didn't beat the game. You may think you beat the game. You may have seen the ending. And I don't want to be that guy. Except in my heart of hearts, I am that guy and I do want to be that guy. But I can't publicly be that guy because I will be shouted at on the internet again. I don't want that.
No, nobody wants that.
And that's where collectibles begin, you know, when we get into the interesting question of collectibles and difficulty. But rather than get into the weeds on that one, let's talk about perhaps a different collectible from a different game. Do you have one in the old revolver there in the old chamber?
Yeah, I do. And I'm going to do one now. I'm going to do one now that is proper jewels, right?
Oh, I'm excited.
Yeah. I'm going to tell you some of the best jewels you can get in any game. And as soon as I say it, you'll be like, oh, yeah,
yeah,
of course.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's all of the different jewels in Shovel Knight.
Ooh. Oh, those are good jewels.
Shovel Knight. That, I don't know how retro a game has to be on Retronauts, but it's older. It's distressingly
I'm
a bit older.
Pretty
than
sure that it just turned 10, so it's now retro. Yeah,
but
well, you know
way,
they're re-release. You know they're doing a re-release of it, right? With new stuff. Yeah,
new stuff.
They're doing a sort of air quotes remaster of Shovel of Hope, which was the original Shovel Knight campaign before they added all the stuff, and now it's got 20 playable characters and rewind and save states and all sorts of things like that.
I might want that then.
And everyone on the internet is like, "Oh, I can't believe they're re-releasing Shovel Knight again," and I'm like, wow, Shovel Knight again. Can't wait. I love Shovel Knight.
Well, the reason why Shovel Knight is particularly good, is there's many ways. One is that every 2 minutes in Shovel Knight, that's not enough. Every 14 seconds, I bet, in Shovel Knight, you do something that makes a jewel or a coin come out of something, and you then want to get it. That is constantly happening in Shovel Knight. All of them are real good. They're really, really, really nice to look at. They've made lovely little jewels. They've made ones that are like little green square ones, little emeralds. They've made ones that are, what other shapes are there? There's big red diamonds,
yeah.
Big red diamond shaped ruby ones.
Even bigger purple ones.
Ooh, there's the kind of middle sized blue ones, I think, that are nice as well. But
very, very small ones as well, the white, tiny white ones, yeah.
Oh, I like those ones. And also, there's a thing in Shovel Knight where you're not just breaking blocks to get jewels out, you're not just hurting enemies to get jewels out. You go up to clumps of earth that have got little nuggety bits and bobs sticking out of them so you can tell that they're full of jewels, and you dig them with your shovel and they explode out with all jewels and you have to go and collect them all.
The best thing about it is that the biggest jewels don't come out until you've done 3 digs, so it's like increasingly riches, showering you with riches. I like the ones that are on the wall, and when you knock them down, there's a ball. And if you hit the ball in midair, it bursts and all the tools come out. It's perfect.
They're so right. Mm-hmm. Everything about that is perfect. It's not just like, oh, we like looking at jewels, but they made it. They came up with ways to make it that you feel how the jewels are. You know, that you have to dig them out and scatter them and stuff. They're so nice. I like those jewels a lot.
Yeah. The thing that hurts the most is when you die and you lose some.
Oh, it really, it makes you obsessed with catching that flying bag of your stuff.
It's worse than losing lives. I would rather just go to a game over than lose my monies.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Also, interestingly, as everyone presumably knows, you can break the mid-level checkpoints to get more jewels out of them if you want the game to be more challenging. And what my favorite thing that they did is between some of the stages, not all of them, I think every other stage, there's a sort of... it is every stage. There's a campfire sequence, a bit like Golden Axe. But at the end of it, you can actually put out your campfire like you are supposed to do legally by digging it, and more jewels come out of it.
I didn't know that!
Yeah, and you get a little trophy as well, like be smart, be safe or something. Only you can prevent forest fires. It's very cute, yeah. Shovel Knight is wonderful. I'm glad we got a chance to talk about Shovel Knight. It's brilliant. It's the precursor to the whole modern, like, well, not the precursor, but one of the most important modern retro throwback games.
Oh, yeah.
In its direct, like, yes, we're doing a sort of a semi-sequel to DuckTales, but with Mega Man thrown in there and also shovels.
Well, that's why I started saying I don't know how old a game has to be on Retronauts, but it is a retro game.
Yeah. Well, that's my. I mean, I've done it into episodes about games that are brand new that happen to be retro-y. I think that's fair enough, really. And if anyone says anything about it, why, I shall simply ignore them unless it's Jeremy or Bob, in which case I shall say, yes, Jeremy, yes, Bob, I'll do as you say.
Yeah, obviously, yeah. But even there, this is a 10-year-old game, so I think even there.
I think it is now 10, yeah. I think it's 10. That's why they've done this Shovel of Hope remaster thing, which I'm looking forward to, and I hope isn't too expensive because it will be about the fourth time I've bought this freaking game.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you have more to say about Shovel Knight? Because I'd like to...
Not really, no.
Now, here's the thing. Now, we've talked a lot about Rareware today because you have to, because a lot of their games are based around collecting cool things.
Yeah.
And Bon on the Retronauts Discord has nominated Donkey Kong 64's Golden Banana.
Oh.
Now, the best thing about the Gold Banana is when you collect the gold banana, he goes, no, not even when you collect it. When the gold banana appears in the level or is revealed, the voiceover, there is like a mystical noise, and the voiceover goes, oh, banana.
Oh, I can imagine that being funny when you're a kid.
It's
people
funny.
Saying banana in an amusing way.
All 200 plus times that you hear it, it's funny.
Isn't it? Isn't it interesting that there isn't a generation that hasn't had a thing where someone says banana and that's funny by itself? Like, that was our generation's one. Previous generation had, like, the television program Top Banana. Yeah. And now the Minions do it.
The banana splits, bananas in pajamas.
The Minions do it now. They say banana in amusing way.
Oh, banana.
Now what?
Aren't the funny Minions funny?
Oh, the funny Minions are really funny. But I'm a little bit concerned that what's funny about the way all of these different people say banana is that it's kind of in a sort of an African accent, maybe. I wonder if that's the origin of the comedy
right
of saying banana
that.
In a way, and I think it might be problematic.
You might be right about that,
Be problematic.
There's problematic bananas, yeah.
So I don't know about that. And it may, that's why it rankles me a little bit when Minions say
you've been rankled by it.
A little bit. But of course...
But that's the only way in which you're rankled by Minions, in all the respects that you find them fine fellows and wish them the best.
But of course I might just be making that up, and it might just be an amusing thing that someone came up with that, like, I'll say banana.
I mean,
like
in English, the word banana is quite funny. In
banana.
The sense of it's
bananas.
Just... It's a syllable, and then it's the same syllable twice, and they both have the same sound. So that's amusing inherently.
You can, when you're a kid, you can have fun going banana, na, na, na.
Yeah,
and
a banana.
In England, you can say to someone, oh, you're nana. And you've called them
a silly
thing.
Yeah.
And that's.
And you've got
nice.
Banana Man. Then there's Banana Man.
Banana Man!
Yeah,
So we've established bananas are good. But what about the golden bananas, dude?
I'm going to just put my. I think what you've raised is a valid point. But I'm going to pitch. From my perspective, I think it's funny in Donkey Kong because it's Donkey Kong saying it. And I think it's just because when you look at a big gorilla and you imagine what its voice might be like.
Yeah.
It's funny that it's like, oh, banana.
He's really excited.
I feel like it comes from an innocent place. I'm not saying that it's born in an innocent place, but I feel like it comes from an innocent place. We've managed to find a way to be woke. The banana episode, and that's
the banana episode of Retronauts. We should change the name.
Dear Retronauts, I am sick and tired of this woke banana stuff that keeps being inserted into your shows.
It's just the idea.
You're someone who's never listened to Retronauts and was told about this by someone else.
There's a purity and an innocence in just being really excited about a banana.
I wonder if I should do my funny Banana Man joke, which is incredibly offensive. No, I won't do it.
At first I thought you should, and then you got to the end of the sentence, and I thought, maybe you shouldn't.
Yeah. A long time ago, I thought of a Banana Man joke that I think is hilarious, and no one has ever responded to it positively, so maybe later.
Send it in to the Beano and see what they
say. Yeah, they won't print that. Unless they will, maybe they bloody would now, knowing what they put in there now. Anyway... Gold banana. Now, the gold banana is the entire point of Donkey Kong 64. You have to get as many of them as possible. You don't need all of them, but you need lots of them to finish the game. In fact, in reality, you need... I can't exactly remember how this works. You need blueprints to get more time in the final level, because it's like a timed level.
Okay.
So you can get through it with a sort of minimal number, but it's not possible to finish without a certain number. It's literally, you can go to the level, but you will not have enough time to finish it. Now, if you fail, you just get thrown out. You don't, like, lose and have to start over the whole game or anything. But it's interesting, I think, as a premise. Now, Donkey Kong 64 is one of the more maligned games by Rare. It is widely considered online on the internet to be bad.
Which game? Donkey Kong 64?
Donkey Kong 64, yeah.
Is it?
Because there is too much collecting, and there is a degree to which I can see where people are coming from when they say that.
Yeah, it's factually true. There's a lot going on there, and I do remember...
You're collecting single bananas, you collect coins, golden bananas, you collect crystal coconuts, you collect four or five different types of ammo, gold banana fairies, banana balloons. I could go on. There's lots. Watermelon.
I do remember that after the great enjoyment was had playing Banjo-Kazooie, we then got this. And it was like, well, this is definitely more of what we like, but it felt a bit heavy, a bit much.
The thing is, it is, and yet I want to take this opportunity while we're discussing the game on here to just say, if you vibe with Donkey Kong 64, if you are prepared to accept what it's throwing at you, I think it's a bit of a masterpiece.
Mm.
The amount of stuff and now, here's the thing. I was going to say this earlier, and this is relevant, and this is actually something I think is potent and worth mentioning. Not that everything we've said so far hasn't been unbelievably incisive, but this is very potent also. Now, I've been thinking about this as of just recording, and it's only just occurred to me, and I'm not emotional, but I am slightly moved because of what it means. Now, I was thinking back to one of the first video games I ever played with Sonic the Hedgehog on the Master System, 8-bit Sonic, okay? And I didn't really know what I was doing because I'm like four. I don't know what I'm doing. So mostly it's someone else playing it, and I'm sometimes doing some stuff, and I'm watching, and I'm just kind of like, yeah, this is fun. It's look at Sonic, and he's doing stuff, you know. Now, at the beginning of level 2 of Sonic 1 on the Master System, if you go to the bottom left, you fall into a cave, and if you go to the bottom left of the cave, is a sheer wall, and to the right is progress, yeah? Okay. And I remember watching the guy who was playing it jump into that wall, and the wall is false.
Mm.
And he goes behind the wall. The wall is still there. You just can't see Sonic anymore. He's going into a little tunnel. And because it's 2D, obviously, it's obscured. You know, you can't see the tunnel.
Where
goes
is he?
Goes through there into a tiny room. Now, when you're in that room, all you can see around you is that checkered pattern of the platforms. The Sonic classic checkered pattern. Brown, hazel brown. And there's an extra life in there. One up, the most valuable thing in that game, apart from the Chaos Emerald, although it's arguably more valuable even than that. And thinking about it now, I think that seeing that might have been the moment I realized that video games were really, really cool.
Mm.
Because it's like, oh, secrets are hidden in them in a means by which I've never conceived of a secret being hidden before in a completely new medium.
Yeah.
That's cool. That's why I like collectibles, you know.
Yeah.
There's nothing that pleases me more than walking through a false wall and finding a thing. It's like why Super Frog is one of my favourite games, because it's only that.
Stuart, that's my next one.
Oh, what a great cue.
Super Frog and its secret walls. But no, but wait, but hold. Because this one is...
That was what Egypt sounded like when it was
That's what Egypt sounded... Yeah, so in Super Frog... Yes. Just to establish the general...
As if
stage.
I ever got that far in Super Frog, honestly.
Really?
Go on, though.
Really?
I don't think I've ever got past this castle stages.
Oh, well then I might be about to blow your mind.
I'm excited about this.
So,
I'm excited
so
about
everybody,
this.
Everybody, Super Frog, I'm sure Retronauts has talked about Super Frog before, so I won't tell you all about it, but you're a frog.
We must have talked about Super Frog.
Haven't it?
I mean,
not,
who else would have
we'll
done
it? We'll do it. You probably have. And you are a frog, and it's a platform game, but it just is
sponsored
a good...
Sponsored by LucasAid.
Yes.
Hmm.
It just is a good platform game, and it has collectibles in the way that a British game
does. Oh boy, does it ever have collectibles.
Oh my god, it does. And the way that it has some collectibles, I mean, they're all over the map, they're littered everywhere, and they're of different sorts and types. And most of them are things like apples and bananas and pears and things.
Mm.
And
the iconic collection of fruit that is so associated with our games industry.
Yeah. But then, there is a thing which I, as a child, used to call... a let-through. And that's not what it's called. It's just a secret wall. And the way that they work in Super Frog is, you go up to a wall, and if you reckon that it's a secret wall, you just touch it. And the animate, basically, he pauses in what he's doing. If you jump to it, he pauses in the air, while the animation of the wall rolling away plays. And it will just, it'll just roll away. There'll be a rolling, thunderous sound of rolling rocks, and the tunnel will go off into as far as it goes, and then Super Frog will shout something that's presumably wahoo. It's
I was
like,
about to say, yeah, isn't there like a wahoo kind of
wah-hoo!
Noise? Yeah, there is.
And
yeah.
I thought he said, let through, let me, I have been let through. So I called it a let through. Now, these usually are just like, oh, like in the first level, which is all kind of woodland themed, you'll just find a little cave in the wall and you'll find more fruit in there or whatever. Brilliant.
Yeah.
You might find Spud. You might find wings. You might find LucasAid, that sort of thing.
You might find a tiny Super Frog that gives you an extra life.
And I'm sure, and my memory of this is hazy, right? I've not played this since the 90s, since the early 90s, like the last time I played Super Fun. But in the fourth world, which is ancient Egypt, and yes, has absolutely brilliant Alistair Brimble music in it, there is an epic let-through to end all let-throughs. It's an amazing moment where...
So you're saying they follow through with the let-throughs?
They do. If you can find your way down to it, there is just like a little underground maze of these things, one of which you like you touch the wall and it rumble, 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 let through, and you go in there, and there is just this massive, you know, and it must have been a reference to, like, you know, Tutankhamun's tomb. It's like this huge burial chamber of stuff, and the collectibles in there, they're lovely jewels.
The Tutankhamun's tomb, if you want to be let through. Yeah, there's like a horn, and you squeeze the horn on the door, and you toot and come in.
Oh, good. I'll try that then. That's good. I'm glad that you've given me that factual information. So, it's full of jewels, and in Super Frog, the jewels are sometimes you get little diamond jewel. Like, I don't mean diamond the jewel. I mean diamond the shape. You know, a square up on its end. That shape.
Yeah.
There's jewels of that, all different colors, of course. And then there's one kind of jewel that's like two or three little jewels all together in a little sparkly array.
A cluster.
Yeah, beautiful, absolutely lovely. And you've got a whole room full of them. And you're doing that thing where you jump up and down through them, leaving zigzag holes in the collectibles.
Like the Yellow Switch Palace in Mario World.
Exactly like Americans the Yellow there. Switch Palace. Yeah. Yep. So that's a good... And by the way, then, once you've been through that room, you're tempted to go back out again and up to the normal level. Don't do that. Go down to the bottom. Underneath the original let-through, there's a second let-through.
Secrets within secrets every time. Every time.
And this one goes on for so long that you've never experienced anything like it. It goes like rumble, 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 rumble. And you're like,
and you go and get like a cup of tea and you come back rumble, and it's still
rumble,
rumbling.
Rumble, rumble, yeah. And then he goes, let-through. And you go, yes. And you go through there and there's just room after room after room of not as much stuff as in the first room, but there's more of them. So, yeah, Super Frog Jewels.
The fact that you thought that he was saying let through and that they were called let throughs and that you are adhering to this even now,
I know,
is beautifully Bulmer. Like,
I can't get rid of it.
Crystallized.
I can't get rid of it. Dave. It's stuck in my brain as if it was true. It's not
wonderful.
True.
Thank you for sharing this. No, but who cares? Make your own truth. Yes.
Okay, Stu, I'd like you to click this video because this is the moment.
I'm watching it right now. You can get this is my live reaction. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Do you know what? It's mostly fruit.
Oh my goodness, that's
Do you know what? It's mostly fruit. I was wrong. Maybe that's not the room I was thinking of, but there was some jewels in it.
Look at all those bananas in there.
I know.
Are you saying that everything you just said was wrong, and you've just
everything I said
was
wrong? Unless there's another bit that I'm thinking of that this isn't it.
Oh, this just makes me want to play Super Frogs. Remember when they did it in HD and it was just
it was like someone had done a big sick.
Do you know what annoyed me was that the gameplay was good, but
yeah, it was
just those looks. I just could not get over those looks. I tell you.
Yeah, all we need is for somebody to patch that to be real Super Frog.
You know, I think I actually finished the HD Super Frog, but it's not the same levels. You can unlock the old levels in the casino minigame.
It's not even the right levels.
No, the main game is all new levels, but you could actually unlock all the original levels, but not with the original graphics, so there's no point.
That's disgusting.
Yeah, it's sickening, isn't it? I don't know what you're thinking. Team 17 have made some leaps and bounds since then.
Okay.
Would you like to know an interesting piece of Super Frog trivia before we move on?
Yeah. Of course.
They made a game on the GameCube, PS2, etc. called Worms Blast, which is a bit like Puzzle Bobble, except Worms.
Huh.
And Super Frog is one of the playable characters in it.
Oh, cool.
How good is that?
That's really good.
The only problem is you have to play Worms Blast in order to access him, but he's there.
Oh, that's a problem. Well, you don't. You can play Super Frog.
Yeah, that's true. Instead. Don't play Worms Blast, play Super Frog instead.
Why not? Puzzle Bobble's a good kind of game. They can't have gone too far wrong with it.
No, they did. Okay, imagine Puzzle Bobble, except you're in a boat.
Uh-huh.
You're shooting worm-style bazooka shells at the things above you instead of just pressing and they fire. You have to do worms-style firing. And, I'm not finished, if you miss and the shell falls on you, it will hurt you and you will go under the water and you will be damaged. Now, also, if you knock the blocks down by changing their colour and they fall down, if they fall on you, you also get hurt. So you have to not only do Puzzle Bobble, but you have to do Puzzle Bobble like it's Space Invaders and you have to dodge the things that are falling down.
This sounds like a lot of fuss and bother.
Yes, it is. It's a faff, is what it is.
I forgot a really important thing about the Super Frog jewels. I forgot.
Yeah, what's that?
One of the kinds of jewels is crowns. So there's little crowns about the place littering the floor, and you collect them and it goes bliddling.
Crown jewels.
Yep.
Mm.
Great.
Yeah.
Breakfast.
I think Robocod had that as well.
Yeah.
If it's okay with you, I'd like to jump forward a little into a different console altogether, because there are some gems that we can't not comment on.
Okay, great. Let's do it. What's that?
Now, have you ever heard of the computer games franchise Crash Bandicoot?
Is that the one where you are some guys in a boat and you're firing at some shapes above and you have to hope they don't fall on you and the worms missiles don't fall on you?
Let me just check. No, it's different to that.
Is that the one where there's a load of lemmings?
Sorry, I just saw it. And you know how it is when you just get the info and then you immediately forget it. I just have to check it again now. Hang on, might be on the back. No, it's a different thing.
Probably not, then. What is it?
What it is in Crash Bandicoot is basically you are a silly man. And he wears blue jorts, like John Cena. And he's a silly man who runs into the screen in 3D on the PlayStation and does jumping. It's actually very good. Mm. He does tornado spins, breaks boxes, and collects fruits. Now, the fruits, the Wumba fruits, are excellent to begin with. They make an absolutely outstanding noise when you collect them. But the real thing you're there for in Crash Bandicoot is gems and crystals. Specifically, it's all about collecting crystals
and gems. Of
course it is.
That's the one thing any of us are... Yeah. If any of us had the opportunity to collect those in real life, that is all we would do.
You would do it, yeah.
That would be the main thing.
You'd forsake everything to
collect
gems. We would
pivot our whole... Seriously, like, it doesn't matter who we are, whatever we do, whatever we're into, if we found ourselves in a situation where you can just pick up jewels and now you've got jewels, that is what you would do.
It's true. I completely agree. But with Crash Bandicoot... are you familiar with the game?
Genuinely, seriously. I'm actually not.
Okay, well, first of all...
Because I was going through a phase where I was annoyed at the existence of the PlayStation because it was threatening the Dreamcast, and quite staunchly anti... this guy, I've even forgotten his name, Crash Bandicoot.
Yeah, Christopher Bandicoot.
I simply haven't had the opportunity to catch up.
First of all, it's very good, so I really do recommend it. But what Crash Bandicoot has that makes it so wonderful to me is it has simplicity in everything. Now, it doesn't mean there aren't obtuse secrets, which is a good thing.
Indeed.
But it's very simple in what you're supposed to do and very well clued. Now, starting from Crash 2... you have to collect a big, shining purple crystal in every level. Mm-hmm. They're not that hard to find. They're just kind of a formality, really. And when you collect them, they glow and they go angelic, which is really great.
Mm.
But they are just a formality, as I mentioned. Now, what you really want is the clear gems, which are sort of platinum, see-through-looking gems that are big. They look a bit like house emeralds, actually. Mm-hmm. And the way you get those is by breaking every box in a level and then getting to the end. And when you get to the end of the level without having done that, you will see a hologram that says, like, for example, 13/20. Like, oh, I've missed 7 boxes, you know. And sometimes those boxes you will think, oh yeah, I didn't go in the bonus area. They must be there. But sometimes you'll be like, hang about. I've done this with a fine tooth comb. How have I missed 11 boxes? But then later you find out that there's another entrance to that level that lets you get the boxes. And it's really cool. Mm. And then when you get the gem, it also goes, and the gems are the sort of completion thing. But there's more than that. There's even better. It's even better because this is where the collectibles start to become practically useful.
I don't really see how it could be better than that.
It's going to get better. Hold on to your hindquarters there, bummer. There are coloured gems, different coloured gems. There are only 5 of them, I believe, but they are all different shapes.
Oh.
And they are very hard to find. They are the rarest ones in the game. They are very well hidden. But as you make your way through each level, you will sometimes see little wireframey holograms of these colourful gems, and you'll be like, oh, that's weird. I can't do anything with this. I wonder what it's for. Then later in the game, you will stumble across, for example, the blue coloured gem. And then if you go back into the level where I had that wireframe, oh, that's a platform. That's a platform now, baby.
Oh, okay.
And you will stand on that platform, and it will take you to a new area that will allow you to either break all the boxes in the stage or get another completely separate, hidden, even more secret clear gem.
That sounds really good.
It's very, very good game. It's a very good game.
Those jewels very are like unlocking your consciousness on different wavelengths.
It's true. It's all very spiritual.
Yeah.
But the fact of the matter is you do spend 99% of the time looking at Crash Bandicoot's bare bottom. It's not bare. I don't know why I said that.
No, it's not
his clothed bottom. I just can't stop thinking about his bare bottom. That's why.
And bare bottoms in general.
In general, yeah. My life is essentially dictated by arses. And you wouldn't believe the way that they speak. But let's move on. Do you of an other collectible we can talk
Shall
about?
I do another one?
You do one, and then I'll do one, and then we'll wrap it up, I think.
Okay, so what's happened is that we have, we've ended up talking about collectibles. And when I made my notes, we were mainly going to talk about jewels. So
I've changed the game.
But that's fine, because we had a good one. But I had a good jewels. And it's just not going to last very long, I don't think, because there's not much to say about it. But it is the gems in Dungeon Keeper.
Oh, now we're talking, because I've not played this. This is interesting.
Oh, no.
Educate me about these gems.
So, Dungeon Keeper. I'm surprised you haven't played Dungeon Keeper. What happened there?
The thing is, I have never been into anything strategic, really. Mm. I'm a big jumping on things heads guy.
So, I'm between, which is that I'm a looking at pretty things in a video game guy. Mm. And so, there are plenty of games that I've played and fooled myself into believing I was enjoying when all I was doing was I liked the way it looked. And Dungeon Keeper isn't one of those. That's a game I genuinely enjoy. But like, basically, the way I play strategy games is I'm not good at strategy.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that people don't like strategy games for, is they're like, well, you've got to have strategy. And the people who like it because you've got to have strategy. Not me. I like it because I get to look at the thing in the game.
Yeah.
And that's what it is. And if it just turns out to be a kind of strategy I could do, then I'm happy. So theme park. Like, I'm not playing that to try and make the most money. I'm playing that to put down, like, rides and see people go on them. Right?
I like theme park because you get to look at a big old chunky hand.
A chunky hand?
A big hand, you know, a big chunky hand that's moving around them with a mouse, and you can make roads and the little guys all follow the roads.
If you like a chunky hand, Stu, then I think you should play Dungeon Keeper, because Dungeon Keeper, it's just an absolute joy. You are digging out little rooms and digging out corridors to go between the little rooms, and then you're saying what the rooms are. So this is going to be a room where the monsters will all train and they'll go on their training things. This will be a room where the spiders live and there'll be a load of spider nests there. That's great.
Spider room.
And now and then what you do is you dig through the walls, and basically it's, do you know what, I've never thought of this until this second, but I'm going to go ahead and say it on record, it I think is the inspiration for Minecraft. And the extremely satisfying act of going dig, 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 poff, dig, 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 poff, and the blocks kind of let you through in Minecraft. That started in Dungeon Keeper, where you tell them, I want these bits to be dug, and the little gremlins you own go over there, and they go dig, 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 poff, dig, 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 poff. And the best ones are the ones that have got jewels in them. Well, at first you're looking for the ones with gold in them, and you can see because there's little gold nuggets coming out of the rock. And you go dig, 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 puff, and out come all gold for you. But sometimes you find gems, and they're sticking out of the rock. And I don't have anything else to say about it. It just looks nice.
Well, no, that does sound very good. I'm
just
going to
install. Just makes you go,
I've got Dungeon Keeper on Good Old Games, so I'm going to install Dungeon Keeper, and
I'm
going to
genuinely
give it and go.
I think you should have at least a go, and then don't worry if you do what I always do when I play Dungeon Keeper, which is about 2 levels in, I go, well, this requires a modicum of skill now, I'll stop.
That sounds reasonable. That's what I do with like theme park and theme hospital.
Yeah,
I'm just like, well,
exactly.
this is now hard. I'm out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, not even hard. This is now some challenge
you
exists.
You have to play the game properly. Yeah, but until then,
that's
you'll
how
have
I was
a really
with,
nice time.
That's how I was with Company of Heroes and Dawn of War. It's like you do the tutorial levels, and I'm like, yay, cool, I win. And then I'm like, hang on, I'm not winning. Why am I even bothering playing this if I'm not winning?
I really enjoyed Dawn of War, and I got through the whole campaign. The expansion campaigns and everything, I had it all. But whenever I went online, I would just start the game, and immediately my opponent would have 7 zillion Terminator squadrons and tank guys, and he would just immediately annihilate me. And I have no idea how you're supposed to play that game, it turns out. I was just enjoying myself too much.
Warhammer 40,000 Yawn of War, that's what I say.
That's not bad. Thank you. I've got the hankering now. I might play some Dawn of War soon.
No, that's good for you. I would like to do an episode about Warhammer games at some point from the perspective where I have people on who actually know about them and like them while I just direct traffic because I don't like Warhammer 40K.
I do.
Yes, I know. That's very good. You should be on the episode. But
I don't know anything is the trouble.
You don't know Shadow of the Horned Rat?
I don't know Shadow of the Horned Rat.
Oh, my goodness.
Sorry.
This is just humiliating. Anyway. I think we should. No, I don't. I never want this to be the longest ever episode. So let's Let's wrap this up because there's one gem.
Yeah.
That I feel like not mentioning it is just stupid of us, like absolute like brain dead level of idiocy.
Okay.
And it's Spyro the Dragon.
Oh, I'm too old for that. I've never played it.
Tell me all about Spyro the Dragon. Okay. You are a small purple dragon in Spyro. These are PlayStation 1 games, and I personally like the first one the best for reasons I will get into, but the gems are the whole game, basically. Ooh. You go into a world. There is a beginning-to-end aspect, but it's very almost trivial.
Uh-huh.
What you need to do to get 100% to finish the game is you need to collect all the gems in the level. Now, there's usually about 300, maybe 400, but there's not 400 individual collectibles because each different gem is worth a different number of gems, if that makes sense. It's like 1, 5, 25.
Yep.
And if you're really lucky, you might get like 50. That might not be a thing. I might have made that up.
Thank you for your demonstration of different numbers. Now I understand.
Yes. We begin with 1, moving on, of course, to 2, the familiar 2.
Now 1, is that a myriad or not?
No, 1 is not a myriad, and I would say 2 is not a myriad.
Not even 2.
I think, honestly, if I'm being really, pernickety about this.
Yeah.
I think I don't think you've got a myriad till you've hit at least 6 or 7.
Well, yeah, I agree. More than that.
I don't know. I think 7 can be a myriad. Like, if we have 7 options, that's myriad options, I would say.
I disagree. I don't think it can.
Well, I think you're an idiot. Shut up.
Oh, okay.
Sorry. I thought it'd be funny if we had a false argument about the dumbest thing in the world. Anyway, yes. Now, you're in these sort of 3D worlds, and all you've got with Spyro is he can breathe fire in a little burst. He can charge, which is hold square, and he runs super fast, and it makes a cool trotting noise. And it's a very basic, open sort of 3D platformer. But the thing that makes it brilliant is the levels are quite small. So they have to tuck these things away in clever places to hide them, rather than just do like go a million miles over here and then there's one.
Oh, that's good stuff. By the way, as you describe this, I'm watching a video of the game, and I would have really liked it.
You'd still like it.
Yeah, I might play it.
But what you have is the ability to glide, which means that as you play through the levels and you make your way up to higher and higher vantage points, you'll be looking around and you'll be like, oh, I'm this high up now. Maybe I can get onto that rooftop over there or that crag over there. And in sort of in a memorable instant, quite early in the game, there's an area that honestly looks like in any other game of its era, it would be the background.
Right. Yeah.
But it's not. You can just fly over onto this rampart that looks like you shouldn't be able to get there. And there's just more gems there.
Yes.
And it's brilliant, because that's the whole game. Now, people like Spyro 2 and 3, and I think they're good games.
Uh-huh.
I'd say they're very good games, in fact. But what they do is they add in more stuff. They are like,
right.
Okay, this is fun and all, but what Spyro needs to do is play hockey and skateboard and do all these mini games. Now, that's not to say there aren't mini games in Spyro 1, but there's only one type of mini game, and you only do it about 4 times. and it's not that bad. And also so optional, in a way. But the real fun is just getting thrown into these worlds, listening to this amazing music done by Stuart Copeland of The Police. It's amazing. It's so good, Dave, the music. It's so good. It will blow your balls into the back of your sack, I swear.
Okay.
And I've seen that happen. It's not that's pretty.
That's not far from where they are already.
Okay, well, I didn't mean that
within
sack.
A few inches, at least.
I didn't mean that sack, are. Dave. I didn't mean that sack.
Oh, you mean like my bag that I'm wearing?
I meant your throat sack. You know, like you use to ribbit.
The one that I inflate to ward off enemies or attract mates.
Yeah, I don't know what sack you thought I was talking about. Some vulgar nonsense, no doubt.
Yeah,
but what I love is that purity in Spyro of just you and the gems, and that's the only thing to worry about. You're not thinking, I need a certain amount of orbs or keys or anything else like that. Like Spyro 2 even has the absolute antichrist, which is it has bits where in the level it's like, oh, I can't swim yet. I need to learn to swim and then come back here. And I hate that because in Spyro 1, every time you visit a level for the first time, if you're good enough, if you explore hard enough, you can fully clear it. There's no get this and then come back later. There's none of that.
Yeah.
In a level, there might be a locked chest that requires a key, but the key will be in that same level.
Yeah.
It's all very beautifully contained, almost like sort of diorama, like this is it. And that, just that, and the relentless pursuit of gems, which, by the way, make a really cool tinging noise when you collect them, it's just glorious.
That's the important thing.
It's just glorious. And even better, when you beat the game, as in when you beat the final boss but haven't got all the gems, you gain the ability by pressing the left L3, you know, the left stick in.
I know the one.
Your little dragonfly pal, Sparks, will point towards the nearest gem. He'll go... Vroom.
Oh.
So once you're past the game, if there's still some that you can't find, you can get a fairly consistent hint as to where to find them. It won't tell you exactly where they are, but it will give you the gist of it, so you're not wasting your time.
That's good.
It's very good. And I think that Spyro may be... I don't think this is controversial. I think Spyro the Dragon may be the peak of gem collecting in video games as a franchise.
Wow, okay.
Oh, even better, you'll love this. Last thing, you'll love this.
Yeah.
When you leave a stage... What you do is you jump onto a portal and you fly into the air, and it's like, it is obviously loading, but it's unbroken. It's like disguised loading. Mm. And then Spyro will be gliding through the air, and a chest comes up from the bottom of the screen. And at the top of the screen, it says, total treasure collected, 240. And every single one of those gems individually flies out of your score in a big cluster and goes into the box, and you bank them. Like, and you never have to collect them again.
Yeah.
And the whole time that's happening, you're just ASMR. Like, it's just like,
yeah.
Ooh. And that's the joy of collectibles, Dave. That's
what kind of like at the end of the levels in Rayman Origins. Ooh! You talk about nice collectibles. Rayman 2, the Lums.
Ooh. Oh, goodness, yes. They're nice, fellas. Aren't they? Yeah.
Is it them that. Right. So, in Rayman 2. Is it them, or is it something else you collect, where the sound effect for collecting them is...
I think that's...
It's a lovely little tune.
I think that's like a noise that plays when you like hit a switch or reveal something. Here's an excuse for me to be all obtuse.
Okay.
Rayman 3 on the Game Boy Advance, of all things.
Game Boy Advance,
and you know,
okay.
Rayman 3 is Hoodlum Havoc. It is a very odd game. Uh-huh. On the Game Boy Advance, it is very obvious that it was originally a Rayman 2 version, because all the stuff in the game is from Rayman 2.
What? I loved Rayman 2 so much, I should have played that on the Game Boy Advance.
But then occasionally there will be one of the hoodlums will be there from Rayman 3. But seriously, look it up on YouTube sometime and you will go,
what do you think I'm doing
that's
now?
The most beautiful thing I've ever seen in my entire life.
Ooh, that's
and
nice.
It's a really good game. Really good game. It has everything from Rayman 2, riding on the back of the rocket with legs, you know, the boss where you're throwing. It's a Rayman 2. It's Rayman 2. They should have just said it was Rayman 2 because that's what it is.
Yeah.
But anyway, yes, Spyro, I think, is the pinnacle of collecting gems, and I think that's why it's a really good place to scratch a big line under this episode, which I think has been quite good.
But I said at the start that I had a wild card I was going to do.
I've
got to do it.
Yeah, of course you have to do it. Hang on, give me a second. I need a second to... Okay, I'm ready. I'm ready
because,
for the wild card.
Like, this is why I love collecting jewels in games. This is why I'm on into this. I have a game that's my favorite one for doing that with, but it's a little bit naughty of me.
Oh, boy.
I'm going to send you a picture of it.
Oh, goodness.
Are you ready?
Me.
Are you ready?
I am ready. I'm very, very excited about this, yeah.
It's this.
Here it comes. Oh, Dave. You know what? That has excavated some primal memory of wanting this more than anything in the world.
So what I've just sent Stu is a picture of Waddington's board game, Treasures and Trapdoors. This is something that me and my wife bonded over early on. We both used to have this.
The first thing you said to her when you met her was, you fuck with Treasures and Trapdoors.
It wasn't far off. Yeah. It was a board game set in ancient Egypt where what you're doing is your player piece is a little cart and you're trying to put jewels in it. Stu, I'm just going to start sending you pictures of these jewels.
I want to see them. Oh my god. Oh.
Look.
Oh my goodness, is that. Oh. Oh.
Look.
Oh, hello. Oh, I'm saying. Oh. Oh, that's a bit. That one's a bit graphic. That's
it
a bit.
It came
graphic.
With all these little plastic.
There's no, does it really need to be that high res? I can even see the little indentations in them. Ooh. I can't imagine running my fingers over those little indentations. Oh, Jesus.
The facets. Yes. Ooh. They're so small.
I got the
and
vapors.
They're little round faceted balls. They come in blue, green, red, and yellow. And they look like little Chaos Emeralds, except a bit rounder than that. And then, oh, they're so nice. And they're second only. No, they're first. But the second is in joint place, Curse of the Idol and the Crystal Maze board game. Because the Crystal Maze board game came with crystals. And you collected them, but they were plastic. And then the Curse of the Idol board game came with just one of those, but it was red. So because it was
ruby. The Crystal Maze crystal is probably the most desirable item this side of Shiny Shearer, isn't it?
Yes, that humanity has ever created. Yes, we all wanted that on the telly. Still want it now. I saw one in real life once.
Oh my goodness!
It was in. It was at primary school. We were doing a tour of the local police station.
Oh my goodness!
And they had one in.
They seized it.
In a sort of, well, they may have. It was basically like, you know those cutlery dividers you put in a cutlery drawer?
Yes.
They just had one of them out on a desk full of different pens and stuff or something. And they had a Crystal Maze crystal. And they're like, it definitely was. It was either an actual Crystal Maze crystal or it was like, because this would have been in the first or second series of the Crystal Maze era, it was probably like whatever it was that they bought a job lot of and just engraved.
Are we talking O'Brien or are we talking Tudor Pole here?
We're talking O'Brien, first series, second series.
All right. I don't know what the divisions of the series are in.
Do you not?
The Crystal Maze. No, I don't. Please tell
me. Okay, it's that it was Richard O'Brien all the time, except one year it randomly wasn't. And we went, what? Who's this? But I now
Over
see.
The hill with the swords of 1,000 men.
By looking back, I now see that Ed Tudor Pole in the Crystal Maze. That's a missing Doctor Who that we never had. He should have been a Doctor Who at some point.
Well, Richard O'Brien should have been a Doctor Who, really.
Well, he should have. I mean,
You know who should never be a Doctor Who? Richard O'Eddy.
Yeah.
Awful man.
He said a rude thing about a book, didn't he? He said that a book was good when it was bad.
Yeah, he did.
I made it sound like that was trivial. He actually did, and he shouldn't have.
Yeah, he was a bad man. He's a twat. Anyway, on that bombshell... I think that you've successfully argued that physical games are the best for these kind of things, honestly.
Can you imagine having real... imagine if they did a Shovel Knight board game and it came with loads of little plastic jewelers.
You know, I think there is a Shovel Knight board game, actually.
What? I
might be wrong.
It better not just come with pictures of jewels on little bits of cardboard.
There is one.
Better not come with.
It's probably like Fantasy Flight games, but it's all just plastic cardboard rubbish, you know. But anyway,
it's got some good little Shovel Knight guys, but it hasn't got loads of little plastic jewels, and that's why I want deluxe edition, please.
No value.
No value to me.
But thank you very much for listening to this, which has been, I would say, possibly the silliest episode we've ever done.
Yeah,
you know, it's going to be divisive. repetitive, but I hope you've enjoyed it. And let's face it,
some people are going to go,
it wasn't very long, was it?
No, you'd be fine. Some people are going to go, that wasn't a very good one. But
I think that we did some rather good things in there, actually. I think we did a quite good job of making it relevant. And you know,
I think we made people interested in some games they may not have played before. So that's Retronauts, baby.
But here's the thing about collectibles.
Yeah.
Some of them are pointless.
Yeah. Yeah, dude. We've already met. We've mentioned RoboCod. We mentioned Zool. Pointless collectibles, but we love them.
And this was a pointless episode. So thank you very much for listening.
Thank you.
Dave Bulmer, lovely Dave Demon Tomato.
Bulmer, lovely Bulmer. Were you singing? I was singing. But
where can we find you?
You can find me on various episodes of this. You can look up various episodes of Retronauts that I was on. Outside of that, you can find me on a podcast called Sonic the Comic, the podcast, where we examine the fact that everything that anybody thinks of Sonic the Hedgehog now is basically a retcon. The whole series has been completely drastically changed. So we've gone back to the past, to when it first started, and we're not looking at the games, we're looking at the spin-off media from then. The British ongoing comic that lasted for years and years. It went on for like 200 issues, and we review every single one of them, tell you what happens in them, and also we look at like what it was like to live at that time in the past. We crack open my old teenage diary and go through that. We've had the saga of how I met my wife as a teenager.
Yes, it was very interesting. Yeah,
and that was lovely to re-experience. So
when you walked up to her and said, "You fuck with treasures and trapdoors."
Trapdoors, yeah. That's in there, and it's just and we have good guests, and it's actually It's an actually good podcast. It's not just some idiot with a podcast. You should listen to it.
So Shade Throne. I get what you're saying.
No, I don't mean this. This is a good podcast as well. It's just that a lot of people in the world are idiots with podcasts that aren't worth listening to. This one's good. You should go and listen to it. There's animateds of it people have done. That's how good it is. Go and find them on YouTube.
Yeah. With drawings of you with beard.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a very good podcast, and I was on it once, and I've been told that it is a very funny episode. So
It's a really funny episode.
I'd like to go on it again sometime and maybe I will. But as for me, I've been Stuart Jupp, and I like to do these silly British episodes sometimes.
Did I say that's called Sonic the Comic the Podcast, or did I just
You may have, but that would be in tune with this episode where we just forgot the name of the game just constantly. It's called Sonic the Comic the Podcast.
I'm called Demon Tomato Dave in places. Look me up. You'll find
it. Thank you for listening to Retronauts. If you want to support Retronauts, then for a mere $5 a month, you can access every weekly episode a full week early, which will make you the coolest kid in the playground. I love saying that, and I really shouldn't, but I can't stop. Because I think it's from Rohilastapur. I think I've basically just lifted it from
I see.
Which isn't so good. But also, you'll get access to the Diamond Fights Brilliant This Week in Retro columns, and you'll get brand new bonus episodes, I believe 2 per month, completely exclusive to the Patreon, and they're good episodes. They're not just like thrown away things. They are genuinely good, insightful episodes. Along as our older episodes, you know. And I'm so bad at ending podcasts, so I guess what I'll say is, in the end, Naughties listeners, the real shiny things, the real beautiful things that I want to collect, it's you guys. Thanks very much for listening. I'm going to kidnap all of you.